She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. Oh my gosh, Dr. Susie Edge follows us.
Well, buy me a bow and take me to Rio because I'm open for business, Richard.
I'm going to need you to release my tit.
I'm the girl that they tie up in the barn.
It doesn't even occur to her that being a woman would be a barrier for her.
Fake it, Tom, for me. And point for singing.
And Tom says that doesn't count.
Bullshit.
That's what he said.
He favors you. That's not fair.
So I'm late today.
Getting in here.
Yeah, that's kind of you to say because I'm almost 15 minutes late to our scheduled filming time because I fell asleep reading.
Girl, you've been busy.
And Tom feeling me up.
He's just trying to get his payment.
He, in fact, told me. So I had a bad dream last night that, like, he left me, which, of course, that was my dream.
Yeah.
I don't know why. He's not going to leave me, but I keep having these dreams that he does. And I woke up from the dream, and he had reached over and was cuddling me. And that's not, like, we're not night cuddlers. He is a billion degrees.
I
don't want him touching me while we're sleeping. So I told him about this at church, and he went to respond. He was like, no, that's not church appropriate. So I asked him when we got home what he was going to say. And he's like, you should have just woken me up with a blowjob. And I was like, first of all, you cannot give, like, you would be unconscious, so that's sexual assault. He's like, I am giving you blanket permission to wake me up with a blowjob, a hand job, or a tit in my mouth. I don't care.
Okay, Tom.
You have blanket permission.
Okay, Tom.
And I was like, I know what you're like when you get woken up.
Hard pass.
I'm not going to do that.
Hard pass guy.
But apparently he felt that gave him blanket permission to grope me and feel me up while I was asleep until I woke up 15 minutes ago.
Did you wake up screaming, assault?
No, I didn't. But I woke up and was like, I told you I wasn't supposed to fall asleep. I've got a film.
And then
he was still groping me. And I was like, can you stop so I can get up?
He's like, meh.
I'm going to need you to release my tit so I can get out of bed.
Meh.
Fully maybe. Clothed. Like, I was just asleep.
Nice. Let's see. My week has
marriage
been...
Marriage is weird.
Nah, it is so weird. Mm-hmm. Matt's been on turnaround. He started that Monday, Sunday? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I've pretty much been solo.
Mm-hmm.
Both girls have been sick.
Mm-hmm.
Piper tried pulling a fast one today, but I didn't let her.
What do you mean?
So, you know when you tell your kid something and then they try to use their friend to ask for the thing you told them no for?
Uh-huh.
She did that with her boyfriend today. I told her this weekend that she was staying home because she's been doing a lot lately and she hasn't been well and she needs to stay home and rest. And I get a text message from the boyfriend asking Piper can come hang for the weekend, for the day. And
hold up. Like, hold up.
Piper begs.
I read this in a text message and thought that Katie sent it.
No, I absolutely sent that.
I was so like, Katie's had a lot going on today.
Nope, that was 1,000,000% my house.
I guess I really needed that nap.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to need a longer one later, I think.
Maybe Tom will leave me alone.
No, he won't. He'll massage you to sleep.
Massaging and groping, not the same thing.
In his mind, probably.
I don't need my boob massaged. Thank you very much.
So I blew through this week's book and another book this week. And I'm halfway through Blackbird and Butcher today.
You are Butcher and Blackbird. You're further than me. I'm only...
Right. And usually in our season, like, I'm dragging to, like, read. And I'm, like, just popping it off.
But I am...
But I did read my first Moth... I am too. I read my first mafia romance this week.
Oh, gosh.
Not a fan. I'm not especially either. When, like, there's 95% is just sex and there's no storyline.
Yeah. And also, I don't understand why in those dark romances, they have to be so, like, vulgar with the descriptions. Like, don't tell me about the sounds and the smells and, ugh.
Oh, I find it funny.
No.
I'm finding Blackbird and Butcher and Blackbird funny.
Are they, have you gotten to those parts where they're having spicy naughtiness?
Not yet.
Okay. I haven't yet either. I'm just to the point now where she goes to their restaurant.
We're still slow burning. We're still slow burning. But let's talk about this week's book because I was impressed with how much you liked this.
Listen, this week- before you do that, we had a really shitty first month of this pod.
Facts.
And I am feeling much better about October because I loved this first book and I'm enjoying Butcher and Blackbird.
I'm squeaky today. I'm sorry.
It's all good. But yeah, sorry. Go ahead. Tell us what book we read.
So this week we read Anatomy, a Love Story by Dana Schwartz. Schwartzman?
Schwartz.
Schwartz? You've got the cover. S-C-H-M-A-R-T-Z? Schmartz? Schmartz.
No, it's S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z.
I'm seeing an M on the cover. Am I reading that wrong?
Her name is Dana Schwartz.
It looks like an M on the cover. Fuck it's you, dyslexia and shitty fonts.
But look how pretty this cover is.
Ooh. I know, it's gorgeous. And the next book's just as pretty.
I know. And
after the next book's is just as pretty.
I know. And after I finished this one, I went and Amazon had them both on sale. I got hardbacks of the two of them together for $20.
This is Piper Addy's copy.
Listen, two of them for $20 when the hardback is $18.99 regularly. Mm-hmm. Also, this is a library copy. Support local libraries.
Would you like a synopsis?
I would love nothing more than a Molly.
Which I'm kind of nervous about this synopsis because you really liked this book. So whenever you really enjoy a book, you give really detailed synopsis. So I'm always like, I'm going to fuck it up.
I always give a detailed synopsis, even when I didn't enjoy the book.
Right. But if you like it, you do it good justice. If you don't like it, you pound it out and you make everybody know it.
I think I did a good job with the description from last week. And I did not like that book.
I'm not saying you don't do good jobs. I'm just saying we know the difference. And they're always excellent synopsis.
I'm not good at hiding my emotions.
No, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Honesty is a good quality to have in friends.
Yeah. All right. Do your synopsis.
I will do my damnedest. Edinburgh, 1817. We meet Hazel Sennett, which is spelled S-I-N-N-E-T-T. That's right. Let's get a check mark for the dyslexic girl for knowing how to say that. Sorry. I am.
You listened to the audiobook. They pronounced it for you.
Shut up. You can't give me one thing.
Molly, can you give the motherfucking synopsis?
I'm working on it. I'm sorry. Let's try this again. Hazel Sennett has been betrothed to her cousin Bernard for as long as she can remember, but all she wants out of this life is to be a doctor and a surgeon. But to become a surgeon in these times as a lady is unheard of. After her older brother's death, her mother feels illness and that her younger brother will meet the same fate. So when the Roman fever returns to Edinburgh, she flees, leaving Hazel alone on the family estate. Mm-hmm. This is when Hazel dives deeper into her studies. Mm-hmm. Jack Currier meets Hazel when she is trying to sneak into an anatomy show. He is a resurrectionist who helps the surgeons find bodies to study. The two start to work together in an effort to help Hazel become a surgeon. Hazel is on a time crunch. She must pass her test, and to do it, she is to be wed, and do it before she is wed. But she is starting to gain feelings for Jack. What will Hazel do? This gothic romance is a perfect start to our spooky season. Let's dive into some questions.
Okay, so before we dive into the questions, this is what I want to say.
Okay.
this book is historical fiction. It's mm-hmm. historical romance.
Mm-hmm.
I have consistently said on this podcast that I do not like historical fiction.
You do not.
But I have decided that I like gothic historical fiction.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
Gothic romances. Every single time that we've read a gothic romance for this podcast,
you love the book. It's moody. I think it sets a scene and it sets a tempo. And
I think I just like. I don't know.
Some bitch has got to be murdered.
It's got to happen.
That's the tagline for the next episode. That should be the tagline of this. Some bitches have to get murdered.
Gotta be murdered.
That's the tagline for Butcher and Blackbird, by the way. That should be. Some bitches gotta get murdered.
Right.
So let's start off. Dana Schwartz started this book with a Mary Shelley quote. Do you feel it sets the pace for the reader? I'm gonna read it to you for our people at home playing the poem game. To examine the cause of life, we must have recourse to death. Do you feel this set the tempo? Did it set you up for this book as the author intended it to?
I think so. And I think I told you this early on, but there are a lot of similarities to this book in The Bone Garden, which we read mm-hmm. in the first season, and Mexican Gothic, which... Was that also in the first season? It might have been. Mexican might have been the second
was in season one. It was season one. It was season one.
And Mexican Gothic uses a Frankenstein Mary Shelley quote at the beginning of it too. I think you get the vibes that we're going to build a man at some point, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be some sort of like.
Yeah.
Life playing has a God.
Yeah.
And that certainly happens here. I was surprised that I liked this book because I don't typically like historical fiction, because I don't typically like spooky books. I'm just my camera here.
No.
But I felt like the tone was set from jump.
Okay. Well, I'm going to argue that.
Oh.
I think it is it's super easy for an author of a gothic anything, gothic horror, gothic romance, gothic YA, whatever. It is easy to just pull a Mary Shelley quote and be like, huh, look, I'm horror.
But Mary Shelley is the queen and inventor of the genre.
Agreed. But it doesn't mean we need to use it every time we write a fucking horror novel.
I think it's more the sci-fi elements and not the horror. Mm-hmm. But this book was like Frankenstein for a new generation.
It was. And I'm not ringing the bell for this book specifically. I'm ringing the bell for the overall
the cliche
use,
of using it.
The cliche of it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I can see that.
Yes. Did she pick a quote that absolutely fits this novel? Did she pick a quote from the godmother of fucking horror? Yes. However, everybody else does that.
Yeah.
Everybody else does that.
Yeah. But to quote you from last week, sometimes a cliche works.
Exactly. Exactly. I love when you quote me to me. That's from somewhere and I don't even know what. I'll find it later.
I don't know either, but that was funny.
Hazel wants something more. Nope. Why? Let's try this one more time. Hazel wants something most girls of her time don't even think about, to become a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen this type of storyline before when mm-hmm. it comes to a YA novel. Strong girl, big dreams. Does mm-hmm. it work this time?
I think so. That's actually one of the things I wrote in my review for Goodreads, that it's very much the kind of YA book that I like, the trope of the girl who's going to rise up and fight the patriarchy. And I think it worked
against
here.
The world.
Yeah. And I think it worked here. And I also think that I don't think Hazel was doing it because she's a feminist and because I think she was doing it because she wanted to be a doctor. God forbid that a woman would have a dream like that, you know?
Right. Like,
and I feel like it's similar to like Katniss. Katniss didn't want to be the Mockingjay. She didn't want to be the face of a revolution. She just wanted to fucking survive. Save her sister.
Look, Katniss is the epitome of an anti-hero.
Oh, yeah.
The epitome of an anti-hero, right? Mm-hmm. Because everything that happened to her was against her will. Mm-hmm. And in this book, this isn't her being I'm a feminist, so I deserve to be a doctor. That's not how this is going. It's not her views pushing her to do this. This is her drive for education, right? Mm-hmm. Hazel wants nothing more than to study these things, to be in the scientific world, to be intelligent as these men, to study like these men, to learn like these men, to cure like these men.
Right.
And that's all she wants in world.
And more importantly, she's not doing it like these men. She's doing it because it's something that's interesting to her.
She's not doing it for fame or fortune or anything.
Or to be the first woman. She just wants to do it. It actually doesn't even occur to her that would be a barrier.
It's for the science.
For the science. It doesn't even occur to her that being a woman would be a barrier for her.
No, because why? Why? It's, I'm going to pull a Deb Harkness quote again. In the second book, Diana is given a set of keys to Philippe's house. And she's asking what all the keys are for. And she goes, which one? And she's holding this ring of keys. And she goes, which one's to the library? And Philippe goes, we don't lock up books in this house. We don't withhold education.
That's lovely.
Right? That's it. We don't withhold education. If you want to learn, learn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's all this is she wants to learn.
Yeah.
I want to talk. Okay. So next, I want to talk about the pressures of the times on Hazel.
Mm-hmm.
She is her parents' only daughter.
Yep.
And when we start the novel, she's already betrothed to her cousin. She's been betrothed to her cousin and promised to her cousin since they were children. Like, she has known since day one Bernard and her are have to be together.
Mm-hmm.
While this is common for this time frame, it does not seem to suit Hazel. Mm-hmm. Would you personally have survived in these times?
So when I read this question, immediately my gut was like, no, I wouldn't have because I'm a feminist and I would have just done what I wanted. But then I actually sat with this question for a little bit and I feel like I can't judge because here's the thing. I love love. I love love stories. And I feel like I may have been one of those girls who wanted to get married. Like, that was a big life goal of mine.
Yeah.
Was to get married, to find my partner, and to start a family. It wasn't my only life goal.
No.
But if that was your only prospect, if that is what you had that you could do with your life.
Right.
And I actually had
this feel you could have been realistic back then?
I feel like I probably would have done that. I probably would have filled that role in society. I was having this conversation with someone recently about how women were have historically been the cattle, right? Mm-hmm. So I will trade you whatever and I'll have this woman as my wife. And how it's still ingrained in us to fight for that. And so when we have the man and we have the kids, then we have to find other things to be petty about. So these
ain't that the truth?
Fucking PTA moms who
seriously
fight over dumb shit.
Those PTA moms
and side note, I'm not talking about the PTA moms that, like, the ones that are my friends. Like, you guys know who you are. I know a few of you listen. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the stereotype of the fucking PTA mom. Because that is now the thing to fight over. And we have to constantly be catty over things.
Because it's reprising their role as queen of popularity, like in high school.
Yeah.
It, see, here's the thing.
And you think about, like, I'm going to use Gilmore Girls again. Emily Gilmore. Her job was to be Richard's spouse. And there are a few times in Gilmore Girls where she goes off the rails and just buys shit.
The plane episode.
Yes. And the episode where she goes to the mall and Rory and Lorelai are there and she just buys a whole store of stuff that she doesn't need.
Do you have a globe? I'm going to buy you a globe. She package that globe up for her.
And he's like, that's the display. It's not even for sale.
She's like, I don't. And she just stops. And she's like, I will get it packaged up. I'm so sorry, Miss Gilmore.
And she buys all those random apples. And then when Richard comes home, she's like, oh, he's like, I've always liked those. And she's like, he doesn't see me.
He doesn't notice.
And so then she goes off the rails and does stuff like, well, buy me a boa and take me to Reno because I'm open for business.
Only prostitutes have two glasses of wine at lunch.
At lunch.
Well, buy me a boa and take me to Reno because I'm open for business, Richard.
Exactly. And see, that is still happening. So even though you and I are self-professed feminists.
I try, damn it.
I still feel like there are things that I get catty over because it's deeply ingrained into my DNA.
See, I think, I want to think that I would, like, personally be strong in these times and go, right. I'm not marrying my cousin, right? Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling that I'm the girl that they tie up in the barn. Because they think I'm loopy, right? You know, well, because I'm a weird kid. I've always been a weird kid since day one. The first time I start talking to the animals outside, my parents are going to be like, that kid's never getting married. We're going to have to keep her in the fucking barn so nobody sees her.
Listen, Penelope got Colin.
Yeah.
You got Matthew.
That is true. But that's the thing, right? I wasn't the weird kid in the woods in the Regency time talking to the trees and being the weirdo in those times.
But
I was being a weirdo in modern day where it's acceptable to be my weird self.
But along those lines, when you think of things like Pride and Prejudice and Little Women, you have these precocious girls who do not fit that mold, who are completely outside of that mold. And yet they still get married.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they still find the true love.
But
Anne of Green Gables, which is more modern than Regency era, same thing there. And we know eventually in Bridgerton, we're going to see, what the fuck's her name? Eloise. We know we're going to see Eloise get married.
Which I've learned that they're really deriving from her storyline in the books to change it so they stay in London, and I'm not vibing with that, man.
I feel like
I'm not vibing with that.
Side note, while we're on Bridgerton, I feel like it would have been better to, I've never read the books, I've just read synopsis of the books, but I feel like it would have been better to have Eloise be the character that's queer, or even Hyacinth, where
I really wanted
Eloise. Francesca doesn't seem like the right choice to me.
I have big feelings, but this is not a Bridgerton episode, and I will go on a tirade.
No, because the one time that we read a Bridgerton book, you didn't bother show up for the episode, and Katie and
I was sick. I didn't have a voice.
Yeah, sure.
I was faking it. That's it. She figured it out. I'm a faker. Big old faker. Faker, faker, faker.
I know you didn't have a voice. I was just being catty,
facetious,
as we just talked about.
Women have nothing to do with our lives. But no, I mean, marrying a cousin, I even think have beef.
It seems like you have to think about Downton Abbey.
But he's Mary, it's his first cousin.
Mary was supposed to marry her first cousin too. It was the way to keep the lineage in the family. So
yeah, and look how great King Charles looks. And his family's all related.
Listen, King Charles does not look that bad, and I will say his sons are pretty
but,
attractive.
Yeah.
And yes, his family was inbred and married in, and his grandparents were, or I guess Charles' parents, William's grandparents, they were, what, third cousins, I think?
Second or third?
Yeah.
I don't like it. No me
gusta. It was not uncommon at this time to marry your cousin.
But now, we know what happens when the bloodlines mix.
Dude, have you ever seen that show, My Big Fat American Gypsy Wedding?
Oh my God, yes.
Several of those girls marry their first cousins.
Oh my God, yes. It is so gross.
That's in our country, y'all. Well, those of us that are listening here in the U.S.
Okay, question four. When we meet Jack, or no, we meet Jack when Hazel is trying to sneak her way into an anatomy lesson.
Mm-hmm.
We learn his job is a resurrectionist man, and we've learned about this before in previous episodes because of previous books. We are well-versed in the job of a resurrection man. Thank you very much. The person who digs up graves and brings bodies to be studied for medical students and doctors. Hazel isn't even a bit hesitant when she asks him, to work for her. What do you think about this job, the grabber of bodies? What do you think of them working together in all this?
So what was interesting to me about what was happening in this story, which takes place in Scotland, was that the police turned a blind eye to taking the body as long as you weren't robbing the grave.
So, which is factual. Like, that is a real thing that was happening back then.
So as long as you left the clothes and any stuff behind, you technically didn't rob the grave. You took the body.
Yep.
And while I do not think it's okay that they violated someone's corpse, I am very thankful that scientists did this, because we have medicine now that we wouldn't have had otherwise.
Agreed.
Now, to be fair, in this day and age, you can donate yourself, your body to science. I have learned that if you donate your body to science, that does not necessarily mean that your body will be treated kindly by surgeons of the future who will, you know, use your body to dissect it. Sometimes your body will be used to check decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
Of the elements.
Mm-hmm. And left outside.
Yeah.
There's a whole farm up in Cortland, attached to the Cortland School of Medicine, up in the woods in upstate New York, that is just a body farm where they leave bodies that are creeks, waters.
Gross. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't love that they violated, you know, corpses. Now I want to say, and I sent Molly the link, so she'll put it below here. There is an amazing woman who makes TikToks and Instagrams. Her name is Dr. Susie Edge. She lives in Scotland.
Susie Edge.
I'm obsessed with her. And when she started following us back on TikTok, I like got a little teary eyed because I was like, oh my gosh, Dr. Susie Edge.
She's so brilliant.
Follows us.
She's so smart.
So the link that I'm going to have Molly put below will be of her Instagram. You can follow her there or on TikTok. She posts the same videos, but it's just easier to share a link to Instagram than it is to TikTok.
TikTok for making that so hard.
So Dr. Susie Edge, she is a physician. She also writes books, and she recently did a whole video about resurrection men and like what their profession was. And it's all factual information. It's all, she is a historian in addition to being a doctor, a physician. And she's so brilliant. And so please watch the video if you want to know more about this. What she's really known for is getting out her pen and mapping the lineage of royal families. And holy shit, it's impressive. From memory, guys. from memory.
From memory.
But I was just so like, holy crap, this is the perfect time. So I messaged her on TikTok. I DM'd her and I was like, hey, huge fan. You know, can we use this content, credit you, share it, and promote you? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. So shout out to Dr. Susie Edge, who I'm obsessed with. I am obsessed with her. Tom hears me say it all the time. And watch the content below because it is really cool, the history of the resurrection.
Is she your Ilona?
No.
Different?
No, but I totally get it with Ilona.
God, I love that woman.
She's amazing.
She's amazing. And she's on Dancing with the Stars.
No, but along that vein, Dr. Susie Edge, which by the way, you have to triple name her like that. Dr. Susie Edge has released TikTok videos, Instagram videos, hashtag not sponsored, about how she's straight and is a married woman, a woman married to a man and has kids because people think she's queer. And she doesn't have any issue with that. She'll tell you in the video, like, I don't care. I'm very comfortable in my sexuality. You can think whatever you want. And people will constantly comment, like, not Dr. Susie Edge having to come out as straight again.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's so disappointing. I'm hetero. Seriously. Roman fever is a big conversation in this book. It is how Hazel's older brother dies, and she is certain she will cure it. After I researched, which I'll put all the research I find.
Thank you for doing that research, by the way, because I was going to, and then I read your notes, and I was like, well, no, I don't have to.
Where was I? After the research, I learned that the Roman fever was nicknamed for, it's a nickname for malaria. Okay. Do you think this book, this part of the book is feasible?
So what do you mean? The curing of it or spreading like the of moments, it?
It's the rehashing of it, but a girl trying to cure strangers, a girl using her home as a hospital, a girl being like, I'm going to study this and figure this out. Is this feasible to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are plenty of women scientists historically that have gone down a rabbit hole of, I will do this. You want to think about the first big, well-known woman scientist, Madame Curie.
Curie, that's who I was going to say.
And her husband was a scientist too, but we know
her. He was her assistant.
We know her. And then fast forward to, in more recent times, just a few years ago, a woman scientist actually was able to take a picture of a black hole. That was her life's goal, was to study black holes. It had never been done before, and she figured out how to do it. So yes, absolutely. I think it's 100% plausible. Do I think it's plausible for Hazel, though? I don't know. She was pretty set in her ways that she was going to be a successful surgeon. I don't think that her motivations for helping these people were selfless. No. She was doing it to learn.
Yeah.
If I treat them, 100%. I'm going to learn. They won't let me go to med school. Well, I'm going to learn this way.
It's the scene with the pregnancy, the woman giving birth. She was, this is a perfect example of that, right? It's, I'm going to help you, but I also don't know what's going on. So I have to learn at the same time you're doing this. So she's literally, this woman's literally pushing, and Hazel's pulling a book out to make sure she knows what she's doing.
Right.
Like, and tell me that ain't some tism shit, though. Like, hold on, I got a book for this. Hold on, I got a book.
I think that what ended up being her benefit was the desperation that the people felt. And this is something we saw in the book, The Bone Garden, as well. Women who would go to hospitals for pregnancy, they were getting, what was it, like pregnancy fever or
and they were called, post-birth fever. It, yeah, but they had a name for it.
I can't remember what it was, but they
if were, I find it, I'll put it in the
doctors
things.
Were the ones that were spreading it.
Because they weren't washing their hands.
they were not wearing gloves, and they were sticking their hands up into women's vaginal canals.
They put their hands in the bloody, like, to check the cervix, right, to see how far long they were, and they'd pull it out, and they'd grab on it, right? Yeah. And then they'd go to the next beck and shove that same hand in and check, and they were spreading germs and cooties. Yeah.
So if you were bed the last fever. One in the line, like, you were going to...
Birthbed fever? What was it called? Birthbed fever?
Something like that. Yeah. But so if you were the last woman on the line, you were definitely going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the first, the first woman could have been
So it helped that there was a desperation of the people. It helped that she had a need. It was not of the kindness of her heart. She was not helping people because she wanted to. I feel like the counter of that was that's what Jack wanted. Jack wanted to help people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why they were a good balance. But I don't think Jack realized what he was getting into until they were, like, putting people in the house in beds, and he's like, is this a good idea? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't somebody gonna say something? Which that rolls me into
question. Before you go to your next question, I just have to say the brilliance of the illusion that Roman fever was called that, not because it came from Rome, but because it looked like someone multiple stab wounds in the back, like Caesar.
Historical burn.
I was like, that's fucking hilarious.
Historical burn. Since we're talking about the house being a hospital and anything, this next question kind of rolls into that.
Mm-hmm.
Since the house becomes this makeshift hospital, right? Mm-hmm. And the little staff that's there is helping. Everybody kind of knows what's going on, but nobody's really saying anything. And this all happens while her mom's out of town. Another feasibility question. Do you think she could have gotten away with this IRL without somebody writing her mom and being like, hey, your kid's making a hospital at the house. Maybe send your brother over.
I feel like no. I feel like
I do too.
It just happened that there were three staff who
were loyal to Hazel.
Yeah. But no, I don't think that's feasible.
I really thought in a household like this, there would be at least one person that is loyal to the family more and the name more than they are to a person.
Well, there is the cook's assistant who says, I don't think Miss Sennett, Lady Sennett, would like this. And she's like, well, you know what? My mom's not here, so I'm Lady Sennett now. What now, bitch?
She pulled rank on her. She's like, flip me for it. Mm-hmm. Tom will get that joke and laugh really hard. Or laugh a little bit, maybe.
Probably just a little bit. He doesn't really laugh hard. Although he did the other day. This was fucking hilarious. And I was too stony pants to tell you what actually happened.
Oh, Jesus. But those are the best things.
I had taken a gummy. And Tom and James and I were sitting at the table talking, and they were supposed to be studying math because he had a math quiz the next day or math test the next day. And instead they were talking about space, which he'd already taken the space test. And I just kept saying, you know, he's already done space. He got an A on that. We need to work on math. But there was a whole discussion of what is the center of the universe.
Me.
The sun being the center of the universe. And Tom was trying to get James to tell him how many times it took the moon, how often the moon orbited the Earth. And then he was like, how many times, April? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know how many times the moon orbits the Earth. All I know is that it takes 365 days for the Earth to orbit the moon. I meant sun. I meant sun. I knew what I meant, but I was too stoned. And James laughed until he cried. And Tom big laughed as well. James was falling out of his chair. And I was just like, motherfucking fuck. I can't tell my son I'm stoned. So mommy knows the right answer, but can't explain it right now.
Mom was just making a good joke. I love living with the nerd kid, though. The nerd kid's my favorite, but it's also super annoying. I have two of them in my house, and they're just...
I mean, they both knew what I fucking meant, and they just...
They're just fucking with you.
Yeah.
Okay, where was I?
I have no idea.
Well, I do know. During this novel, someone is taking the poor body, yeah, the poor, and taking body parts from them. The storyline comes to a head as Hazel is on her way to her test when she sees someone being carted towards the operating theater. The same conversation they had had with the, you know, what's his face, Jack's friend about mm-hmm. losing his arm, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so this is where Hazel discovers that it is Dr. Beecham mm-hmm. the whole time. Were you mm-hmm. surprised?
Not that not fully that Dr. Beecham was the bad guy. I know they were trying to lean us more to like the one-eyed guy. I can't think of his name.
Yeah.
But I kind of figured that he wasn't totally the best guy.
Yeah.
There was a whole thing about him not wanting to get his hands dirty and him wearing the black gloves. Mm-hmm. And that right there, the symbolism of that, if you want to be all English teachery, the symbolism yeah. of the black gloves, like he can't be well, a good guy. He can't. It's like who wears the white hat versus who wears the black hat.
Right. Well, and the symbolism of her dress, and there's a whole conversation of symbolism in this fucking book. Mm-hmm. There is so much symbolism in this novel that we could have a whole conversation straight on that. I don't want to, though.
But I feel like the symbolism in here. So one of the things I did not like about being an English teacher was beating the dead horse of symbolism. Like,
yeah.
everything has to represent everything.
You kids need to understand this shit.
But there's a really great John Green video where he's talking about how he doesn't intentionally write symbolism into his books. If you interpret it that way, if you interpret it that way, that's completely different. I feel like that's what was happening here. I don't think that she was like, I'm going to have to put him in a black top hat and black gloves so people will know
yeah.
that he's the bad guy. Villain, I think she right? is probably just really well-read and a good writer herself. And she knew that that's mm-hmm. the way to go.
Look, the symbolism, you can see the symbolism in the red dress. You can see the symbolism with mm-hmm. the dead older brother, the gray hat, the dove gray hat, mm-hmm. you know, that her cousin wears.
I mean, even the symbolism of what makes a gentleman versus yeah. what these men were actually doing.
Yeah. It's just, and I'm sure there's like whole English classes that use this book, and it's worth using if you're like a high school teacher looking for something fun to use. This is worth using. But I lost my point. Anyways. I'm going to move forward. Jack takes a fall and gets arrested for all that goes down that season in Edinburgh. Wasn't really much of a surprise to the reader. However, were you surprised by Bernard being the reason he went to jail?
Not at all. We see these glimpses of Bernard being very jealous and possessive of Hazel very mm-hmm. early in the book.
Yeah.
He has been told his whole life that she belongs to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And think about Moulin Rouge. I don't like it when people touch my things.
Yeah. I got a little bell ring here. She could have leaned into that harder. Bernard, when they're alone, could have probably been more physical and like, you
know, there's only one time that he's
angry, right?
Physical with her.
Right. And you can see this in him. And those sparks are definitely in this character. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to see her lean more into that mm-hmm. and add that element into here, because that's more the behavior of the men of those times.
But I think keeping it the way that she has it keeps it in the YA.
That's true.
Make him more mm-hmm. aggressive with her than the one scene.
Or
this is scene,
bloodier or more violent.
Then yeah. we move out of YA.
That's true. I mean, the most romance we get is kissing, right? Mm-hmm. So that makes sense.
I found it interesting that even though she was in love with Jack, she still was going to marry Bernard because as they say in the audiobook, because that was what she was told to do. So even though she's bucked the system on all these things, she's still going to marry him.
Because she knows she still has to find a way to survive.
Yep.
She's not dumb. Where was I? Dr. Beecham being still alive is alive, right?
Which is the GIF I sent you after I got
yeah,
to that part.
Yeah, exactly. after all these years, do you find that this twist was interesting? Did you see it coming? Does it change the novel for you at all? So what I'm trying to, what happens, spoilers, duh, come to find out Beecham has this magical serum that helps him stay alive forever. And he's made up of all these body parts, like the monster in Frankenstein.
So, yes, I 100% was shocked that he was still alive and feel like I should have seen it coming because that's exactly what happens in Mexican Gothic.
Right.
But holy shit, that was a good twist.
It was. It was. I just, my issue with it, and I do have a smidge of an issue with it. My smidge of an issue with it is there is no breadcrumbs in this book. You know what I mean? No hints of it.
I disagree.
I think they're too subtle for the reader then. They're too subtle.
I disagree because the fact that he never takes his gloves off, he was trying to hide what was going on with him.
Okay.
The fact that there are certain aspects of the class that he won't do, I think he physically couldn't with the fact that all of his limbs had been replaced. Okay. The fact that people, like, respect him, but they don't want to go near him.
Right.
Like, you think about when they're in the club, when she approaches him in the club, there's all these people that are being like, what, why is she sitting with him? Yeah. And we think as the reader, it's because she's a woman. But when we get there, we can look back and go, oh, that was actually foreshadowing for the fact that people are very uncomfortable.
Creeped out by him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, but again, those are small slivers throughout this book.
Yes, but that's the way foreshadowing is done right.
Right.
That's when it's done right.
This is a YA novel.
I would 100% read Dana Schwartz again.
I too, but that's what I'm saying though. I don't expect my teenager to get those subtleties in here.
But see, that's what makes them better readers. It's like when you watch a movie and it has a big twist and you're like, oh my gosh, I see how we got there. That's what this did. That's what this did. And it's what makes you a better reader.
It does. It does. I'm not saying it doesn't. Jex found guilty in the end. Zero surprise there. Do you think he will take the magical liquid?
I think he did take the magical liquid.
I think so too.
and we absolutely have to have Hazel tell us that she didn't go to the execution, that she did not watch him get hanged, because something happened where we get a letter. What is it, like 6 months later or something, someone from the Americas sends her a letter?
Yeah. And the horse is magically missing. And Yeah, it was, I loved it at the end. I was like, okay, fine, I'll read the next book, you shithead.
I was so happy that the sequel was already out. Like, I've read books before where I'm like, fuck, now I've got to wait a whole year. Like, Fourth Wing, motherfucking, give us two books in 1 year, and now we got to wait till January for the other one? Whatever.
Bitches.
But I, like, that's why I bought it. And I'm so, this is one of the things I told Tom. I was like, I cannot believe that I can't start this book right now. But I can't.
Isn't that frustrating?
Because we are so deep in pod. And there's another series that Katie and I started over the summer that there are two more books in that series and I want to read them. And I can't.
Just don't have the time.
They're just sitting on my shelf. I don't have time.
I don't have time. Okay.
However, with that said, I did not like the audiobook for Butcher and Blackbird. So I'm reading the physical book. So I may actually start
an audiobook.
An audiobook, but probably still a pod one, but then that'll help me get ahead.
Final thoughts, April Goodreads, that's where we are.
I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. I know you gave it a 4. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. It isn't often that a book makes me go, holy shit, I did not see that coming. This book.
She loved this book.
I really did. She does not
love historical fiction.
It does not get a full 5 for me because I feel like there are some things that aren't flushed out enough. And one of them is like, how the hell did she get a whole hospital in her house? Like, that feels very unlikely.
Just the dungeon magically being converted and everybody just being on board. And there's a couple things where I was like, okay, we get it filled out here. That's why my Goodreads is a 3.5. I rounded up to 4.
Wow, that low?
I just,
That's what you gave the book from last week. This book destroys last week's book.
Agreed. But they're equal on different levels in my brain. And I can't explain
it. I can't process that.
You don't have to. It's okay. It's okay. Did you have any more final thoughts about this book?
We did not talk about the fact that Jack is one of the people who actually gets abducted. And Dr. Beecham is going to cut out his heart and cuts him right down the middle. And Hazel is able to nurse him back to health.
With the help of Bernard, unfortunately. And that's how they get caught.
But I am very interested. So the first book, which is Anatomy, which is the one we just talked about, you can see it's a heart here. And not a heart shape like we would make with like Taylor Swift hands. Like, not that. Like, it's an actual heart. And then you can see Hazel right here.
It's an anatomical heart.
Right. So the next one is Immortal, and it's a brain.
Nice.
I can't wait.
It's alive! I know.
I have two books I need to finish for our reading challenge that we do every year, and I do not know how I'm going to fit those two books in.
I am so behind on reading challenge.
Well, I've finished every single year that we've been doing it, and I really don't want to not finish because of two motherfucking books. But
I am Tom picked I've ever been
Dungeon Crawler Carl for my spouse pick book. Which, he's why really would I ever want to read that? And the other book I have left to do is Argyle, because that was a book that was a movie this year.
I have 17 of our 30. That's pretty far for me. Normally, that's pretty far,
but I only have two, and I don't think I'm going to finish.
I normally only get it to number five, though, guy.
I know.
I get to number five, and I'm like, I'm done tracking. Bye.
But do you know how bad it's going to suck that I'm going to miss it by two books, even though we're in September, and I've read like 70 books at this point, but I'm going to miss our 30-book challenge by two?
I know.
And I maybe can do it, but we have some big things coming up that like are more important than this challenge.
Yeah.
And some really big guests coming up that, like, we can't even talk about all the guests yet. Like, that's how huge this season is.
You want to talk about the rest of this month?
Sure.
Let's talk about spooky season, eh?
Well, we already talked about the rest of this month. We can just talk about next week, unless you want to go through the whole month again, if you want.
I don't mind. So next week is Butcher and Blackbird. I'm pretty far along. I'm actually hosting that next week. I'm double hosting because April will be hosting Emma Berry. So
with Bad Reputation, yeah.
Yeah.
And I haven't even started it yet. So
me
I
either.
Need to do that. I gagged on the on page two for Butcher and Blackbird, and somehow I like it. I don't know.
I find it super adorable. I cannot wait to talk about it next week.
They have some good witty banter. I mean, it's murderous. It's still good.
Yeah. So
it reminds me of this really awful movie from the 90s called The Perfect Fit, which is about this couple who murder people to find the perfect fitting pair of jeans, which is like the dumbest concept ever. I'm not kidding. That's what it is.
I have never heard of this.
It's awful. You don't want
to
see it.
I can't wait to look it up when we're done. Okay, besties, we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah.
Bye, gang.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was Anatomy, A Love Story by Dana Schwartz. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins. Music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.